Pop the screen share for me, Raul.
I believe we're live.
We're live.
Okay. Good morning, everyone. This is an unusual way to meet, but it's nice to be here with everyone and trying to get ourselves back to business as usual. We only have two things on the agenda today. They're both very important. The first one will be a discussion from our CFO on the financial impact to our city from the COVID-19 virus, and then a presentation from a developer on the 300 Alton Road project. So we'll start with John Woodruff, and I believe our city manager would like to say a few words.
Commissioner, just wanted to briefly, before turning it over to John, we've been dealing with this crisis now, COVID-19, for over a month. And as you know, early on in the process, we recognized that there would be two impacts to this, in addition to obviously the human issues and the healthcare issues. Number one, that we would probably as a city find ourselves spending money that we hadn't budgeted to respond to this. And that's certainly something that's happened and will continue to happen. And secondly, that depending on how far this rolled out, it could have a very significant impact on our revenues. So early on, we began to take measures, freezing any hiring, et cetera, to address that. And as obviously we took more steps, and obviously, as you know, with the direction and council, mayor and commissioners, the city has often led in the kind of orders we've done to try to address these issues. We've essentially shut down a great portion of our economy, and a few cities are as dependent as we are on hospitality and the impact it's had on our revenue stream, approximately $3.6 million a week. So we have taken significant measures, and today's really is to here present a plan on a almost sort of a worst case scenario for the rest of this fiscal year through September 30th, the steps we would take to make sure that we provide the services we need to provide, that we pay our bonds, and that we stay within our means as they continue to be challenged through this. I challenged our CFO, John Woodruff, and his team, Tamika Stewart, our budget director working with them, and obviously our management team, department by department, to work with them. They've put a lot of time and energy over these weeks in this proposal. I think it's a good proposal. And at this point, I'll turn it over to John Woodruff to walk you through the financial impact and how we're addressing particularly the critical funds of parking and resort tax.
Thank you, Jimmy. Good intro.
Hey, great. Thank you very much. So we put together a presentation to help. There's a lot of information that we're sharing in the memo and the attachment. So we put together this presentation to help focus it and make it a little easier to get a holistic view of everything. So we're going to start with the revenue impacts. To date, you've seen some numbers related to the weekly impacts, but now we've projected it out through the end of the fiscal year to try and give us a sense of what is the scope of the problem that we're trying to solve. We've taken a lot of general cost-saving measures across the organization, so we're going to highlight those. And then we're going to dive into each of the three budget balancing plans for the funds that are affected the most right now, parking, resort tax, and the general fund. We'll talk a little bit about the other funds. We'll kind of summarize how much of the reserves we're proposing to use, and we'll talk quickly about next steps. So this information, you've already seen this before. Just a reminder, when we shut down the city, resort tax is a huge impact. Parking, 80% of our parking demand is from visitors. 10% of our revenue in the general fund is from resort tax. Water, sewer, hotels, and commercial accounts represent 32% of consumption. So we are highly dependent on tourism and hospitality, and we're feeling it at this time. So these are numbers you've seen before as well. The impact by week, $3.6 million. So I'll just move right on to the numbers you probably have not seen yet, which is what are we projecting to, in terms of revenue loss between now and the end of the fiscal year? If you think about it, this is a pretty challenging task, given all the uncertainty that we have, but we've done the best we can. And in terms of each of these funds, we have different assumptions, but in terms of a generalized approach, we've assumed 3 months of shutdown activity and about 3 months of slow activity. So you see it by fund, and when you add it up, $87 million, that's a large figure. It can be fairly intimidating when you first see it. I hope you'll feel a little bit better after we've gone through these budget balancing plans on how we plan to close that gap. So to balance these funds, we really need to take two main approaches. One, maximize cost savings as much as possible. Two, judiciously use our reserves as needed to close that gap. So that's really what you're going to see in these plans is what are the cost savings, how much did that generate, and then how much of the reserve did we end up needing to use. So going across the organization, as Jimmy mentioned, we immediately started taking measures as soon as we saw what was happening. We froze in all non-essential expenditures between procurement, budget, and finance. No one can spend money here without us knowing that it's for essential purposes. We've implemented a hiring freeze, frozen all vacant positions, eliminated virtually all overtime. We've reduced contracted services as much as possible. We've even repurposed employees to provide some of those services, such as landscaping, janitorial, different things like that. And in some areas of the organization, we've started right-sizing because they're not going to be the same after this crisis. To date, 32 positions have been furloughed. All those full-timers are in parking, by the way, because parking's affected the most. 208 part-time positions, 64 temporaries. Unpaid furlough days, the city manager, city clerk, city attorney, and as of yesterday, the inspector general have all committed to 10 days and the management team to 5 days. In addition, no 1% COLA for unclassified employees, no merit pay for the management team, and we're pending discussions with the unions regarding possible concessions that could also enhance these cost savings. In addition, we're pending the second quarter expenditure projections. Here we do every quarter, we do a projection, and this one is going to be a big one because it's really going to show us all the miscellaneous type of cost savings and different things that we hope to pick up. I'm personally hoping to get at least a couple of million out of that effort. It's going to take longer than normal because we need to meet with each department and really talk about what are the assumptions they're using in their projections and those kinds of things. In addition, we'll identify all the out-of-pocket expenses for COVID-19. As of this date, we've estimated about $380,000, and those expenses are potentially reimbursable from FEMA. So in these plans, we prioritize all debt service and vendor obligations. We really need to send a clear message in any of these presentations, any of these documents, any of our public comments that we prioritize doing that. We need to send that clear message to our rating agencies and bondholders. Jimmy and I were already on a call from S&P regarding the parking bonds, and they really appreciated that we've taken this seriously. We've already taken action. We have a budget balancing plan, and we're sending them this presentation and materials after this meeting, by the way. I'm anticipating another one on resort time probably in the near future. Also, we don't want to build a castle in the sand. We're not relying on federal or state relief programs. As of now, not aware of any that would actually help replace some of the revenues we're losing. If and when they are available, more than likely that will take a long time. So for cash flow purposes and other reasons, we wouldn't want to bank on that. So I'd like to go ahead and get into the first balancing plan. This is parking. So parking is an enterprise fund. So it's really runs like a business. The revenues it generates support its expenses. And as I mentioned earlier, 80% of that demand is from visitors. So this is an example where this operation's already been dealing with a negative trend from ride sharing. With this impact, we feel we need to right size this operation. So you're seeing more dramatic impacts to parking than in some of the other funds. We do have bonds. They require minimum debt service, reserve, and bond surety. So this plan doesn't touch any of that debt service reserve. And so the likely revenue loss is almost $27 million. That's a huge amount of money for this operation. In terms of position furloughs, you see 32 full-time, 34 part-time. All the pay stations that are out there right now, we've been transitioning to eliminating them slowly over time in stages. We now feel that we need to go ahead and move forward with suspending all of them. There's a lot of cost savings that come from behind the scenes from things like the collections, revenue processing, just the wireless connectivity, all kinds of things. We've also reduced, at least temporarily, 90% of contracted services, and we're using repurposed employees to provide a lot of those services. So in each of these plans, there's a lot of details. I'm not going to go into all of them during this presentation, but they are in Exhibit A an attachment to the memo. In addition to those cost savings measures, we went to the capital projects in parking, where we'll identify some lower priority projects, the main one being the parking garage at 1262 Collins. Due to less parking demand and challenges with the workforce housing goals that we were trying to accomplish with that project, we feel that we can cancel it, deappropriate it, and use it to help us here. There's also 8 miscellaneous renewal replacement type projects. Big savings came from a lot of the transfers that come out of parking. There's $6 million that goes to parking zone renewal replacement projects, so we're eliminating that for this year. $5.5 million of transfers that go to the general fund, we eliminated those. $2.7 million that they were planning on putting towards beefing up their own reserves, and $981,000 that goes to transportation to support the trolley. So all that we propose to eliminate. So by the way, when we do that, let's say the $5.5 million of transfers to the general fund, that means that then we need to come up with that amount of money over on the general fund side. And you'll see that when we go through the general fund budget balancing plan. So we're shifting it, if you will. So you see here the projected loss, $26.8 million, and then how much the cost saving measures and the reduction in transfers and the capital projects. With all that, we're able to get to zero. So this plan, being able to communicate that to a ratings agency, that's powerful. And we're hoping to be able to do that across the board with all our funds. So shifting over to resort tax. So this is a special revenue fund earmarked for tourism taxes. We get 7 million overnight visitors a year. It's 14% of the city's overall budget. And it does include bonds for the convention center. And the revenue last year is substantial, $32 million. So as we get into this balancing plan, it's important we understand that there's really 3 main areas, because we actually have a mini balancing plan for each one. So the first one is the 2% resort tax, which is really where most of resort tax expenditures come from that you're familiar with. It's a little confusing in that this includes the 2% bed tax plus the 2% food and beverage tax. So together, we call that the 2% resort tax, just trying to keep that clear. Then there's an additional 1% bed tax for quality of life and 1% bed tax for convention center bond debt service. So we'll go into each of those 3 and how we plan on balancing that. So on the 2% resort tax, that revenue loss estimate is $21.5 million. And this is where we fund a lot of the programs you're familiar with, such as the contributions to the GMCDB and BCA, public safety for high-impact special events, event sponsorships, all those type of programs. So we've reviewed every single line item, gone through, made recommendations. Obviously, some events have already happened, so we've just scooped up whatever the savings are from those. Events that aren't going to happen that have been canceled, like the Air and Sea Show, they're captured in here as well. And all of that totals $11.6 million. We propose reducing the transfer of the general fund by 7.7, and again, shifting that burden over to the general fund. And in this fund, we have a 3-month reserve. We're proposing using 1 month, which is about $5 million. So then that way we would still preserve the 2-month reserve, which is kind of the minimum best practice. And we want to make sure that we still have good reserves in this fund. If we didn't want to use that extra 1 month, that $5 million, it would need to come from the general fund transfer, so that would go up. So we feel like this is a balance. We use some resort tax reserve while we're making up the difference from the general fund. So you see here the summary. You see that the $21.5 million projected revenue loss is being covered by the different cost-saving measures, the transfers, and the use of the reserve. And instead of getting to zero, we want to get to $2.8 million. So why is that? That's because we need, in the next few slides, you'll see when we talk about the debt service, we need to generate $2.8 million to move over there to help make that whole. So I'll just ask you to keep that in mind as we go to the next couple of slides. So first we'll do quality of life. Here you can see that most of the money is for transportation to help fund the trolleys. And there's some money for capital projects in South, Mid, and North. And then there's the allocation to the Cultural Arts Council. So we'll go into each one of those. So for the trolleys, they're currently suspended. If we stay suspended through the end of the fiscal year, we'll save $3.6 million and cover that $3.1 million loss. However, I suspect we'll want to operate sooner once we start to open up the city. And if so, we'll need to add some additional funding. So we've a couple of options there is one, we think we can realign some of the money from the arts. You'll see that in the next slide or two. And or we can reduce that resort tax transfer further and shift that burden over to the general fund. So I guess this is one that will be a policy decision as we move forward and start to reopen up the city, determining how much of a trolley function we want to fund and how much that would cost and how to cover it. For the capital projects, we've identified a list. I think we were able to brief everyone on what that list is. It's in Exhibit B. Just want to remind everyone the projects are not canceled. They're not unfunded. They're just pushed out until October 1st. If we are going to propose any canceling or unfunding of projects, that will be discussed during the budget development process in June or July. So no huge decisions are being made now other than to push them out a few months. Okay, the 10% for arts. So it turns out that the Cultural Arts Council has an existing $4 million fund balance. So we would, instead of trying to make up this $512,000 revenue loss, we'd like to just propose funding their entire allocation, which is about $961,000 for the year, from their fund balance, and then freeing up that $900,000 to potentially help out the trolley system or other resort tax needs. So just want to put that out there as a potential policy decision there. Okay, for the debt service. So we're looking at a loss of $5.1 million. Normally, we're able to cover the debt service and throw off an additional couple of million dollars towards the Convention Center Renewal Replacement Fund. So to balance, we're recommending not making that transfer, and we still need $2.8 million to make the debt service payment. So that would come from that additional savings we identified when we went through that 2% resort tax plan a couple of slides ago. So that's why we ended up cutting more than we needed to be able to shift it over here to make that important debt service payment. Okay. So shifting over to the general fund. So this is definitely new information for most of the commission. So the general fund is 52% of the city's overall budget. 10% of that revenue is from the resort tax, which is why we've worked with you over the last few years prudently to build up that strong reserve of $80.6 million. And so when we started this process, we estimated $10 million impact to the general fund alone before we included shifting some of the impact from, let's say, parking and from resort tax over to the general fund. It turns out in the general fund, that's where we have most of the positions budgeted for in the city. When we do things like freeze, vacant positions and things like that, a lot of the savings ends up in the general fund. And the general fund is the backstop to all city funds. Anytime we have bonds or anything like that in any other funds, it's understood that the general fund is the backstop. That's why our credit rating is so important, because even if we're issuing bonds for, let's say, stormwater, there's an underlying credit rating that's always mentioned, which is what it's kind of like the geo bond rating out there that supports all those other systems like stormwater, parking, water, sewer. So the projected revenue loss. So we start with the $10 million that we projected originally. Then we add in that shift from resort tax, from parking. And then we also did the same thing, water, sewer, and sanitation, just to make sure they're in good shape. That gives us a revised impact of $29 million. So that's what now we need to balance to in this plan. And that represents about 8% of the overall general fund budget. So we're able to generate $17.5 million in savings from the cost-saving measures. So that's big. Again, this is where most of the positions are in the city. So when we take these type of cost-saving measures, they are incurred here in the general fund. Also, we went through the PAYGO and renewal replacement list of capital projects, and I think those were reviewed as well in our briefings, and those have been postponed to next year, similar to the quality of life projects. And so with these savings, we only are proposing using $8.6 million of the general fund reserve. That leaves $72 million, or 90% of the reserve, in place, which we feel is really important given the high uncertainty of the times right now, and the fact that we might need some of that money next year as well as we start building the budget. So here you see that summary again. That gets us to zero using 10% of the general fund reserve. So some of the other funds, just real quick, water, sewer, there are losses in revenue. At the same time, we do have quite a bit of offset by not having to pay Miami-Dade County for cost of water or to treat the water, the sewer service. And in addition, we went ahead and eliminated the transfer of the general fund as well. And so we feel that we'll go back through in the next week or two and just confirm that this should do it for those plans, for those funds, but we feel pretty good about it. Sanitation, they're affected indirectly because there's the cost-saving strategies occurring in parking and also the city center RDA, where there's a lot of pressure washing and those type of services. So they're getting impacted from that. So we wanted to eliminate the transfer of the general fund as well. And we'll spend more time on these other funds now that we've got budget balancing plans for the three main ones. Okay, so here I just want to spend a minute on this slide, the use of reserves. So we've tried really hard in our strategy here to maximize cost-saving opportunities and then judiciously, carefully using our reserves. So you see here that, I mentioned recently on the general fund there, we propose only using 10% or $8 million, leaving us a healthy $72 million. And in the resort tax, using 1 month of the three-month reserve, so we'd use about a third, $5 million, leaving us with $10 million. We feel that that keeps us in good shape for uncertainty, the hurricane season, and next budget cycle. So really, what's next and what are you approving today? I've gotten that question several times. Really, a lot of the actions in these plans, some have already been taken, and most of them can be taken by the city manager under his authority. So we just want to start, we would appreciate a green light if possible, at least on a high level, to start implementing the items in the plans. There's a few that we would need to bring back to commission for approval. For example, the arts piece, where we would approve and having the Cultural Arts Council use their own $4 million fund balance to fund their operation. And we would shift that money so that it'd be available for Charlie's. That's an example of something that would take commission approval. Unfunding the parking capital projects, that's another example of something that would require commission approval. But we'd like to go ahead and get started on that if possible. And as we move forward, as you know, there's a lot of uncertainty. So we'll continue to update all the assumptions in these plans. And just keep in mind that we may need to take additional action depending on how things are going. And then as we get into late May and June, July, we'll really shift from this budget and trying to balance it to talking about next year's budget and the kinds of things that we can expect there. For example, as the teaser, I'm pretty sure tourism revenue is going to be at best around 50% of what it is today. So that's going to take some big, difficult policy decisions about what we're going to fund or not fund as we move forward. But that's not what we need to worry about today, but we will be over the next few months. So that's it.
And commissioners, let me add just one thing. John, we are still doing a department by department analysis. So we will be hopefully identifying more savings and cost cutting on a department basis, particularly in the general fund, as well as the utilities.
Absolutely.
Colleagues, any questions, comments? Ricky, I've got a few. Go ahead, Mark, please.
Thank you, David. First off, I want to thank the team and John and everyone who worked on this. I think you've done a fine job, city manager as well, in quite a difficult situation. I strongly agree with what you laid out, that we are going to put up making any liabilities that we are responsible for, such as our bonds and vendor obligations, job one. I appreciate that you made the comment around the trolley. Even though the way we operate the trolley might need to change because of the COVID situation, my assumption is there's a real chance we would be using the trolley. So I like that we've put in that contingency. So my overall thought is I'm comfortable with where we're going and supportive. I've got a few things I'd like to tee up, four specifics. The first is a tracking process. This is a great plan. I think we're making headway. It's my view that we should have some periodic update. One approach might be just to have it heard at finance and we see how we're doing. I don't know if there's been some thought or if my colleagues have thoughts on that, but I think we do need to track progress on a regular basis. And my leaning would be to do it at finance.
Mark, is that a question for us that you're proposing?
Yeah, I'd like to hear from my colleagues and the CFO if that's a reasonable expectation.
So I had something similar to that. So I wrote that down as a note. Can we get back to that? But I do like the idea. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Let's come back to it.
Because this is such a crazy situation, I think, you know, weekly tracking or, you know, biweekly tracking is a very good idea. Sure. But I have some other ideas, so I got that as a note.
Good. Let me tee up three other points and then we can circle back. That's fine. I believe my understanding is that we have used the sort of most likely case, not the best case, not the worst case. So we're in the middle. And I think that's reasonable. You have to start somewhere. What I'd like to have some discussion on is our contingency planning. And if heaven forbid we're closer to the worst case, what sets of plans are in place or will be in place so that we can meet the budget? So that would be my second comment. The third is a concept that a couple of my colleagues have mentioned before, and that is around any opportunities to refinance debt. Interest rates are at historical lows. Is there an opportunity there? Could that be helpful? And finally, I understand we're not planning on federal or state money, but I just want to make sure, is there any action we could be taking proactively? And I want to make sure we're going to do everything possible to bring in those funds to the city.
Commissioner, John and I can answer those questions a little. On the last point, and I'll let John talk about the refinancing. Right now, the legislation that came out of Washington only allowed cities in excess of 500,000 in population to get direct access to the funding that was put forward. Otherwise, the money goes to either the state or to the county, counties of over 500,000, which obviously Miami-Dade County is. So one thing we're going to be doing, obviously, is pursuing both with the governor's office and with the county mayor's office, the extent to which they're going to make the money they get from the federal government available to cities and on what basis. So we are working on that. The other thing we're working on with the legislative team is it looks like there will be a new bill that will probably be coming out of Washington. They ran out of the PPP money already, for example. So there's going to be pressure to have probably a new bailout piece of legislation. And we're lobbying hard to try to open that up to cities under 500,000 as part of that legislation. I think that was part of the plan that I know our Congresswoman Donna Shalala and others were putting forward. Hopefully there can be some bipartisan support for that. So we are lobbying for that. I know John and his team have looked at the refinancing issue. It's obviously a very challenging environment right now in the markets. But, John, I know Allison's looked at it a little bit, if you want to discuss that.
Yes, we've met with our financing team. We actually have a meeting set up with Jimmy next week to review the results of that meeting. And I suspect that at the May commission meeting, we'll have a package put together to go ahead and try to move forward. So what we're seeing right now quickly is that it's very difficult to refinance bonds but you can do it through banks, bank loans. So the traditional method is hard to do right now because no one wants to issue bonds based on your ability to repay when you're seeing 90% reduction in revenue, for example, in parking, just to give you an idea. But we can kind of accomplish the same thing, the different non-traditional mechanism going through a bank loan, for example. Mm-hmm. And so we understand that banks are eager to kind of jump into that space. So I do think we will have, off the top of my head, I think it's at least 3 refinancing opportunities. Mm-hmm. They're going to produce a few million dollars worth of savings. And that'll definitely help us going into next fiscal year.
And John, do you want to say a word maybe about contingency planning? I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, we're using the middle case. We hope we're there. Maybe we'll even do a little better. But I'd like to understand our thought process if things are worse than that middle case and the status of sort of contingency plans if we need another wave of actions.
Good question. Just to give you maybe a little comfort about what likely looks like, for example. So in parking, the likely assumption over the next 6 months is 3 months of only 10% of the normal revenue that we tend to get, and then 20, 25, 30 going into the last 3 months. I think that's pretty conservative. I think we're calling that likely. So our likely is fairly conservative, I guess is what I'm trying to tell you, just to make sure that you have a little comfort around that. I think we should stay strong on our cost-saving measures. If possible, try to generate even more. So then that way, one, if things swing, the wrong way, we have that ready to go. Two, it also provides more opportunity for flexibility in the coming budget. Worst case scenario, we could always tap the reserves a little bit more, but I would advocate for additional cost savings as needed. And I think Jimmy mentioned that as we go through the second quarter projections, we're able to go into have more time to go into detail with every single department and tally up all those miscellaneous reductions. If we're able to negotiate with our unions to get a few concessions, I really think we can generate a few more million dollars out of that process as well. That'll help.
Thank you for the answers, and thank you to you and your team for all your efforts.
John, you talked about the assumptions you made. When you say 3 months of no or little revenue, that starts in April, so it's April, May, June?
Let's see, April, May, June, July, August, September. Yep, that's it. April, May, June, and then July, August, September. So 3 months of basically shutdown activity, which we now know what that looks like, right? And then 3 months of slowly starting to reopen. But in no case do we anticipate being anywhere close to normal. So I just want to give everyone some comfort there.
Well, because as you know, as we make these decisions about locking down or eventually reopening and things like that, just so that in the back of our minds, we understand what the economics of those decisions might look like. So we're assuming now April, no, or little revenue, May, same, June, same. When you get into July and those outer months, what does the assumption look like? Is it 50%, you said?
It's definitely less than 50%. We just start stepping it up over those 3 months. So in parking, for example, going from 10% of normal revenue to 20, then 25, then 30. And so we hope that even if one of those months is off materially, that in sum, cumulatively, that we're kind of landing in a good place. And the truth is there's no easy way to project these revenues, but we felt that at least was reasonable. And I think, as we get most of the information we get financially is on a monthly cycle. So as we close each month and we can see what we have, I think we can provide updates to these plans regularly, as you mentioned.
Okay. Colleagues, I think, please.
Chair, I've got some questions too, but whenever you're ready for me to jump in. Okay, perfect. And I notice I'm losing a few words here and there. So if my audio cuts out on your end, just wave and maybe I'll see that. So I have a few questions. So I'd like a little bit more money, a little bit more information on the Cultural Arts Council. So I understand there's about $4 million that's sitting in that account right now, and it's been built up. If I heard you right, John, I think you said the annual allocation is around between, I think you said $900,000 and $1 million. So can you give us a little bit more information about that issue?
Yes. So when I mentioned the 900, that's what we think they're going to get this year because of the reduction in revenue. They usually get more. I'm trying to look it up right now. One second. Yeah, we budgeted 1.47 million, so almost 1.5 million, but they're because of the loss in revenue, they would only receive about 960,000. So what we're saying is, hey, you're sitting on 4 million. We do their books for them, so we know exactly what they have. Use that 960 from your fund balance and free that up, and now we can potentially use it for things like the trolley or other gaps here that we know we need, because that's such it's kind of a no-brainer on some level in that they're sitting on a fund balance just like we are. We're using our reserves. They should probably be using theirs as well. And we may end up even advocating or recommending that that occurs next year as well.
So if they were budgeted to get about 1.4 and now it's going to be reduced to between 900,000 and a million, how did the account get to 4 million? Is that because revenues were being held over from prior years that just weren't spent? Is that how that happened?
My understanding is that they grant out the money that we give them. So oftentimes when they allocate grants, the grantee doesn't follow through. And sometimes those deals fall apart, number one. And then number two, sometimes even if we do have a contract and we move forward, the grantee doesn't live up to all the expectations in the contract, so we don't end up reimbursing them. These are all reimbursement grants. Should have mentioned that. So as a result, after a period of years, they've been able to generate quite a bit of a fund balance there. So we just feel that this is the time to try to use those.
And under normal circumstances, like if they had a normal year, they would have gotten about 1.4 million this year. Is that right?
Correct.
And in your plan, how much did you have for us to use of that 4 million?
Well, right now it would only be whatever they need for this fiscal year. The max would be 1.4 million in case they've already started allocating all of that. I suspect that it's closer to the 1 million mark and we can work with them. But that process of working with them, there's a whole lot of organizations in these plans we need to start working with folks on. So that's why today, if we could kind of get some kind of green light on the plans, at least overall, understanding that any individual item here could end up potentially being escalated for, commission approval in some form. We just feel that we need to get started. We don't want to waste time and leave money on the table.
And is the plan to sweep part of that 4 million, or what exactly is the plan for that?
Right. So the idea would be if you have 4 million in the bank and we budgeted 1.4, that you would use the 1.4 or less. I'm guessing it's going to be closer to a million from that 4 million, so that you're left with about 3 million. So we're certainly not taking all of their money, if you will. I think it's a good, judicious use of their fund balance. In fact, that's why I mentioned I think they could potentially do that even next year as well, and still have a $2 million fund balance at the end of the day.
So how much of the 4 million are we planning? Are we planning to take 2 million or 3 million?
At this point, 1 million. That's all we're talking about right now, about a million.
Let me chime in for a second, because we're not taking money out of their account, John. We're just saying we're not giving them any new money. So any grants they issue this year would come from fund balance. We're not sweeping money. We're just not putting new money into the account. And so whatever grants they give this in this current year would come out of their own fund balance. Is that correct, John?
Right.
Okay.
Jimmy, can you repeat that? Because I just lost half of your words. Oh,
I'm sorry.
I apologize. No, it's my end, I think. My connection must be a little bit unstable. I'm sorry. Just say that again.
No. What we're doing is normally we would make a contribution to their account on a percentage of the resort tax. If this were a perfect year, they would be getting about $1.4, $1.5 million. John pointed out that because of the reduction in what we're getting from resort tax, it would be somewhere about between $900,000 to $1 million. That would be money we would deposit into their account for them to then give grants. What John is proposing, as we're proposing in this budget, is that for the current fiscal year, that the money that was going to be deposited to their account, the new money, that we not deposit it, that we keep it sort of on our side of the ledger to use for things like the trolley or whatever, and that to the extent they give grants this year, which they probably have and will continue, that those grants would come from their current fund balance. So we're not sweeping money out of their account. We're just not putting new money into it.
So what we're saying is we're not going to put that $1 million or whatever from this year that would go there. So would that still leave them a balance of about $3 million, or Correct. Do they have $4 million now? Oh, so John's saying yes. So they still will have a balance of $3 million. Right.
If they spend all of that, if they spend $1 million this year, they'll have a balance of three. If they spend half of it, three and a half, you know.
Exactly. So, all right. I think I understand that. Let me ask a couple of, can I continue, Chair, with a couple of more questions?
Please. Yep. Floor is yours.
Okay. Thanks. So on the parking, you know, we cut a number of people and, at the rank and file level. And I'm a little concerned that, you know, revenue is down 90%, but we didn't cut anybody at the top. And I think this sends a very bad message to our rank and file workers. So, you know, and getting into the details, and we're policymakers, but sometimes we have to get into the details. You know, we've got, and all this is public information, by the way. A director makes $210,000. An assistant director makes $173,000. Another assistant director makes $154,000. Another services manager $125,000. The fifth person makes about $100,000. That's $762,000 for the top management people. One of those positions, when under your emergency orders, Jimmy, I understood we were eliminating one of those positions, but then I've learned that one position was. We've transferred or loaned that person to the helpline. I got to say, I'm not sure that most people in our customer service call center make $154,000 a year. But I am very worried that we are sending a bad message that, you know, we've kept all the top management in a department that basically has lost 90% of its revenue. And I don't think that's fair to the rank and file. And I would like an explanation on why the top management people have not been cut in a department where we've lost 90% of the revenue. I don't know, you know, just to reiterate too, these folks are not managing the asset. It's my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the assets, these parking garages are assets that are managed by the property management division and not by this department. So Mr. Manager or John, can you speak to that?
With respect to, as you know, management team, we did impose on all of management team, and I don't know how many of the people you mentioned are management team, but it sounds like all of them. We did impose on them the 5 furlough days, no merits, and no COLAs this year. I don't know if Saul is on the call in putting together his plan. Ask him to address exactly what each of these individuals is doing. I know one of them is not just on the call team, but is actually helping manage the resource team. And I think that's the assistant director. But I don't know, is Saul on the call to address this?
Yes, I am, Mr. Manager.
Could you walk through the question on the information on your senior management team?
Certainly. So we have an assistant director of compliance, and that assistant director is overseeing all of our contracts that we put on suspension. They're also dealing with HR issues with employees, any of the furloughs or any issues that may come up with employees with FML or whatever the case may be. So as an internal function, our administrative service manager and a financial analyst, which are doing our budget process and, of course, doing all of the analysis that came into this right-sizing plan that we put through. And, of course, they're monitoring our activities on a daily basis. We're looking at our revenues and expenses, and we're monitoring that on a weekly basis and comparing it to the prior 12 months. There's a lot of activity there between them and a couple of other unclassified employees, their underlings, that are also assisting in that process. I would mention that the department has 38 unclassified positions, but of those 38, 22 are in other departments. In finance, IT, property management, CIP, OIG, 22 of the 38 are within those departments. And while they're not necessarily at the assistant director level they're fairly high level position, most of them are high level positions that do a number of things within those departments that support parking. And just to walk through the numbers for parking, the parking department specifically within the department, of the 16 unclassified employees that are left, as we mentioned, five were repurposed to the resource center, one of them being the assistant director, and three were actually furloughed, so leaving eight within the department to do the functionality of the department. And that includes myself, of course.
Okay, so out of 38 people, 22 people are in other departments being managed by other functions, so that leaves 16 people, five were moved out. So if my math is, and three more were furloughed, so it looks like the top five people, well, one of them has been moved. You've got four top managers left, including yourself, are managing about four or five people. Is that right?
Well, no. So we still have, our garages are still operational. All garages are still operational. And we have two senior operations managers who are unclassified, who operation with other employees within the department that have been repurposed. So, for example, our parking meter technicians, obviously all of our pay stations have been shut down. So those positions have been repurposed to do security in all of our garages. And that's a 24/7 operation. While we've done some efficiencies within the garages to reduce the areas where they monitor, in other words, from the third level down, for example, in a garage, those are the areas that are available for parking. The rest of the, they do roving patrols throughout all 10 garages for security purposes. And that's just an example. We still have needs for our sign shop also. So at the beginning of this whole process with COVID, there were literally over 500 signs that needed to be created, be posting throughout the city and so forth. That team remains in place as well, and they've been repurposed as well to supplement some of that security. We've reduced our contract services by 90%. So we were able to repurpose a good segment of the department employees to those positions or to those functions that were formerly provided by contracted services.
Thank you. But I'm you know, I'm a detail kind of person. Hey, I'm the budget guy, right? So, there were 38 people. I want to get in specifically to the numbers. There were 38 people. 22 of those people are in other departments and they're managed by other people. That leaves 16 people. Of those 16 people, five of those include yourself and the other four people on your senior management team. Now, one of those has been moved, I understand, on loan in the resource center. So, but my point is, it seems to me that you and three other senior managers are managing a handful of people. Is that right?
It's not necessarily a handful of people. It's
how many exactly? How many exactly?
So there are 10 meter techs. There are 15 in our sign shop. There's still some small level of contract employees, about 10% of what we normally operate, that those are also overseen by those senior managers, the two senior managers that I mentioned. So you're looking at 25, roughly 30 to 35 or so, plus whatever is left on that 10% of contract employees, which is probably another maybe 5 to 10, and just going off the top of my head here, I don't have the exact number in front of me, but approximately. So overall, it's probably, well, and also parking enforcement. So we still have parking enforcement controls. We've got 9 officers still on schedule with working supervisors. So they actually also do patrols and are able to issue parking tickets. So they're not just supervising, monitoring other employees. So you're at about 55 or so, which is still a number of employees. And of course, there's chain of command. So, you know, we try to be lean and mean on that so that, you know, we don't have too many layers, but nevertheless, it's about 50, 55 or so.
Okay. No, I understand. So we laid off more than 30 people and the rank and file people, and we have not laid off anybody at the top. And I can't support that plan. So I am disappointed that we still kept basically 762,000 people at the senior level. One person has been moved over, but I'm not going to support this plan unless there are changes. And, you know, I'm here to support them. I got elected by the people, and this is not personal for me in any way. But this has sent a bad message, I think, to all of our employees to say that when we're going to have cuts in departments, we're going to leave all of the senior people making their salaries, and we're going to take out the low-level people. And I think it sends a bad message. I don't like it. And I think of the four people, I want to get some more information because I don't think this person that makes $154,000 should have been repurposed to a call center that I understood was going to be a furlough. And there would be at least one furlough, but now we're finding out there were no furloughs at the top. So I would support that position has to be furloughed and one more. So there's no reason to me of those top four people why half the people didn't get laid off. Two of those people should have been furloughed in senior management. And that's my opinion. And I'm happy to take a reaction from the city manager.
Commissioner, let us.
Jimmy, before you jump in, I'm gonna just throw some support to my colleague, Commissioner Richardson. As you know, for the past 4 years, I've challenged you and the staff to dig deep to cut, you know, payroll, because the issue is our payroll rolls over every single year, and government just keeps getting bigger. It never shrinks. Last year was the first time we started with zero-based budgeting, which proved to be very useful. I'm going to support my colleague here to challenge the administration to look all the departments. I'm not going to pick on parking, but it's illustrative of opportunities we must have before we go to our unions and our rank and file. We have to show some real serious cuts, because this is a serious problem, and we perpetuate it by continuing to roll over a very top-heavy city hall every single year. So this is the great opportunity you and I always talk about. Never let a good crisis go to waste. We're in a crisis. Let's try to identify opportunities to permanently trim some fat.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I appreciate that. So let me just speak in general about employee cuts and cost savings. There are various ways that we can do this. And obviously senior management, Jimmy, you've offered to take an unpaid furlough for a couple of weeks, and some of the senior management are gonna take. That's one way we can accomplish this. There are other ways. I mean, listen, one of the things I thought about 3 weeks ago, instead of laying off anybody, maybe everybody takes a 10% cut, everybody, including me. So that's another way to do it. Another way to do it is to actually furlough individual people. So we can furlough individuals. Everybody across the board could take cuts, or we can do some of these short-term furloughs, so there are different ways that we could accomplish it using a combination of those. But it sends a wrong message to our rank and file people that we keep all the senior people and all the rank and file people get laid off. And I'm not going to support that kind of cost cutting budget. So I think I have the support of my colleague, Chair Areola, and you've got four positions, the director, two assistant directors, and a services manager. I do not support The transfer, there were not supposed to be any reclassifications on your hiring freeze, by the way. The transfer that was made to the helpline, I don't know how much we're paying the rest of the people on the helpline, but $154,000 seems a lot. And I think that position should be up for furlough. And again, this is not personal. And then you need to work with the director there and pick out one of those others so that two of those four positions are a true furlough. And that would be part of the plan that I'm able to support today. Let me just add a couple other comments. I think what you're proposing with the Cultural Arts Council, with only hitting them with this small amount, is something that's acceptable to me now because it leaves them a significant balance. I think my colleague, Commissioner Samulin, already talked a little bit about the trolley system and the cultural arts, and along with that, talked about a tracking system, which I think is incredibly important. What I would like to see is the John and the city administration come back to the chair and this committee once a month with a status briefing so we can look at this. I think that it's hard for us to know right now the exact combination of what we're going to do with the trolleys and with some of these cultural projects, because there's too much uncertainty when how we're going to get reopened and when we're going to get reopened. So I can support the plan right now, but I want us to review this every month so that we can tweak it. We can get a briefing from John and you, Mr. Manager, and that we can tweak it and see what is that right combination. So those are the things that are important to me today. I will tell you that my personal goal, we are blessed that that we have a significant reserve in our general fund, but I don't want to use it all because this is a rainy day, but I want us to be prepared for a stormy day. So while the plan now has an $8 million, about a 10%, my personal goal is that we can get that to $5 million. I really hope that we can do that. If we can't, that's okay. But so what I will support today is the plan you propose, amending it that two of those four positions in parking have to be true for furloughs. They have to go. And we'll leave you, Mr. Manager, with deciding. I know one of them, I don't want to mention the person's name, but that's all public information, should not have been transferred to the helpline, in my humble opinion. And one other position needs to be a true furlough. And then let's have a review every month, and then let's find that right balance between the spending for the trolleys when they come back versus the cultural arts. And those are my comments, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair,
before you guys, I just kind of want to keep us in order a couple of things. I know some colleagues have their hands raised. Mayor Gelber has to leave at 11, so I want him to chime in for a second before we get into the debate. And then Commissioner Gongora and then Minor have had their hands up. But I'm just mindful of time. We've been at this an hour. I've got all day. We have another presentation to go. Commissioner Richardson, I'm very much in your direction. You're talking about doing this monthly. One of the when I finally speak about how I feel about this stuff, I was already thinking about at a minimum doing these every 2 weeks for the time being because of the emergency nature of this. And so if you're good every 2 weeks, I'm good doing this weekly. And keeping it brief just on these topics of how we're going to be, you know, addressing the budget shortfalls because it's so critical. What I think we can do is we can all give Jimmy our comments, and maybe next week, next Friday, we have another meeting so that John has an opportunity to revise his numbers based on our input. And Jimmy has time to think about this rather than putting people on the defense today. Take all of our comments back, because everything you said about parking, I feel the same way, but I'd like that same analysis applied to every department in the city, not just the parking department, because parking's not the only one that's potentially top heavy. There are other departments, and maybe we can individually share those insights with Jimmy and John and not do it here so much, you know, in the public realm to not embarrass anybody. But I have the very similar mindset that you have. Okay. Mayor Gelber?
Yeah, I'm here. Hey, first of all, thank you all. Thank you, Mr. Chairman Ariola. These are very good discussions. They're very important. And ultimately, this is really the first time the Finance Committee has been able to look at this situation other than through private briefings with John. And I appreciate the work John has done and the administration and all of this. I just wanted to, and I think you all meeting at least every other week makes sense. This is a bit of not only a work in progress, but obviously as we get ready for our next fiscal year, some of these things may wash out when we try to figure out our next year's budget. And a lot of the really more difficult decisions may be during that process. I just want to speak to one issue, which is, as we go through this, we are going to return to some level of normalcy at some point. And one of the things I just want to point out is that a lot of our cultural institutions are not sort of separate entities from the city. They are part of the city. We, unlike a lot of other things, we support them, not unlike our parks in a lot of ways. And I just want to make sure that when we emerge from this, they are going to have a huge problem returning. The social distancing issues are going to affect them the most. I don't know that they're going to be able to reemerge the same way they were there. So one thing you all should think about, I'm not telling you, reserve a certain amount for it, but I do think we have to think about the fact that we have many cultural institutions which define our city in precisely the way we like it defined. And I would hate to emerge from this having eviscerated them, because the arts community, especially some of the emerging arts like Miami New Drama and others like that, which we support, don't come back immediately. They don't come back quickly. And there's going to be a huge problem for them. And so I think it would be wise for us, to the extent we can, to realize that we might have to do some, while we are cutting in a lot of places, we may need to do some extraordinary support for some of these institutions, because I think if we emerge from this and we don't have this arts profile, which we have grown over the last decade, I think that would be a real tragedy to our community in the long term, because I know Ricky was the chair of the Arts Center. Hopefully he can comment on this. It's really hard to get these arts groups, viable and working, and it's going to be even harder to fund them and for them to fund themselves the way parking department is an enterprise fund. In many ways, every one of these arts community groups is as well. So hopefully we're thinking about that and not sort of view them as, well, they are not necessarily what we have to worry about, because they're just arts. They're just arts cannot be something this city considers, because the arts profile is what has changed us over the last few decades, and even more so in the last 4 or 5 years. And I think it's a great thing. So that's all I wanted to say, Ricky, and I appreciate your leadership in this and in many other areas.
Thank you for saying that, Mayor. I'm like-minded with you on that. Traditionally, at a national level, even local level, the arts and culture community is the first to be sacrificed in these kinds of times. And this will define how we truly believe in supporting arts and cultural institutions. Are they the first in line to be cut, or are we going to try to say we're going to do everything we can to support them in a meaningful way so that, this defines us, right, and how we feel about our institutions. So I am like-minded with you. I want to tread very lightly. It's not to say that they won't be affected, but I don't want them to be the first to be sacrificed. So we will be very cautious as we consider the budgetary impact to our institutions, because you're totally right. They're very hard to get going and to stand up, and they're always on very fragile financial terms. So they are not big corporate institutions that can withstand these financial shocks very well, and they need support. So thank you for your words. Commissioner Gongora, you've had your hand up for a while. Do you still want to say something?
Thank you. Some of my questions and points were already mentioned by my colleagues, so I won't go back over those. I am not on the Finance Committee currently, but I was back in my prior term in 2009, which was right after the big real estate financial crash. So John was also around, and I want to compliment John because he has done a very good job with presenting this first round of cuts. And I think that his prior experience in having worked on budget reduction measures at that point will come in very handy. As many of you know, the year before last, I voted against the budget. And this past year, I voted for the budget with a referral to Finance Committee to review all departments, something that I now hear you all seem to want to do. I don't want to pick on one department. Like, I don't want to start micromanaging the parking department because I don't think that's our role as commission. I think we set policy, we legislate, we send a message to the city manager to review and come back with decisions, but I don't think that it's our role to start saying cut one position or another, and I think it's dangerous when we go down that road. I do agree with all of you that all departments need to be reviewed. All departments need to be reviewed, and in my opinion, probably we're going to find that all departments have gotten fat over the past 5 years. When I came back on the commission, I asked for a comparison of what the budget had been in 2013 when I left to when I came back in 2017. And I think a review of that will show you where the departments have grown exponentially. So I think this is going to be a good exercise for all of us to bring the departments down to being able to live within our means. I'm not in favor of going out and borrowing money. I'm in favor of learning to live within our means. And that's not just going to apply to the administration as you start to review each and every department. That also is going to be true for the commission. We've, over the past 2+ years that I've been back on, these have been gravy years, unlike 2009 when I came back on, which were lean years. So we've all been able to support groups, causes, events, park upgrades, school programs. We've added inspector generals, lots of millions of dollars at schools, so we're all going to have to look at this holistically. It's not about just looking at one department or one position. We're going to have to look for millions and millions of dollars. So I love this exercise. I won't be a voting member at the Finance Committee level, but I will be at the commission level. And I think this is a really good opportunity for us to come back to living back within our means, as I stated at last year's budget meeting. So I commend you, and I agree that we must follow this process forward.
Thank you, Commissioner Gongora. We've been like-minded on this, so thank you. Commissioner Minor?
Yes, thank you, Commissioner Ariolas. I agree with the comments of my colleagues, but I just wanted to follow up with John on something Commissioner Samuelin mentioned about the refinancing, and you mentioned about the bank loans, which is helpful. But I guess on a bigger picture, I wanted to get a little more information. So while it's true the Treasury yields under the current environment have dropped tremendously, making it cheaper for the federal government to borrow, municipal bond yields had spiked in a way that the market had never seen. It's since come back. But I guess I just wanted to ask, did that volatility in the bond market impact our city debt in any way? And I guess the second part of that question is our bond debt at fixed yields? So because that volatility may return, I mean, we obviously don't know, but I just wanted to know if our bond debt is at fixed yield. So we're sort of shielded, at least in our current debt, from any volatility.
Yes, Commissioner, it's fixed. And so we are shielded, and we are aggressively pursuing different refinancing opportunities that I mentioned earlier. And I'm confident we're going to find some opportunities to save several million dollars.
Great. Thank you. And my second question, I guess, following up on that is, and just to elaborate a little bit on the credit rating agencies, have they had any input? Are they, especially if, I mean, I think we're in good shape in our reserves, and I commend the commission and obviously Commissioner Ariola for the chairing the Finance Committee. But has there been any word that there could be a hit to our credit rating based on everything that's going on?
Yes, the way it works is that each individual debt we have, each bond has its own rating, and they look at them individually. So, for example, I've noticed the first sweep where they're scheduling calls and meetings has to do with airports, transportation entities, parking entities. That's kind of the hierarchy right now where they're spending their time, and they're asking questions like, what's your projected cash flow over the next 6 months? When are you going to run out of money, if you are? You know, all those they're asking a lot of hard questions, if you can imagine. Anytime your revenue is down 90%, as it is in parking, I would be, you know, I'm hopeful that compared to everyone else out there, we've not only quantified what we think that impact is, but we built a plan to mitigate it. I don't know what else we can really do. So I'm hoping that they respect that. At the same time, you know, I think we all need to be ready for a potential downgrade, just at least in the near term, while we work through and see where the end of where the new normal ends up going. But, you know, at least in let's say in parking, we definitely need to right size the operation. It's not going to look the same as it did before, and have it ready for that new normal.
Okay, great. Thanks, John.
Chairman.
Mr. Chairman. Go ahead.
Ricky, I got a couple other comments after hearing everybody, if I could jump in. So on the debt financing, I know that Commissioner Samulin mentioned that, and I am fully supportive of us looking at debt financing if we can get better financial terms. I do not think that we should look to extend the number of years for our debt service. So I don't think we're in a position where we need to spread it out over a future period. If we have something now where we still have a 20-year bond and we can have an opportunity to cut the interest rate and save money but still keep the same 20 years, I think that would be prudent. I, at this point, would not want to push out debt beyond the current years that we have now, just because there'll be other projects in 10 years that we might want to do, and that might interfere with our ability to do that. I also want to weigh in and support the comments that the mayor made on the fabric of our community, and that the cultural arts institutions that we have are very much a part of who we are now. So I know that, Chairman, you mentioned maybe we'll come back on a weekly basis, and I love the idea of us giving this direction to the administration, letting them come back with some new ideas. I would like them, as part of that, to look at this $4 million in the Cultural Arts Council, because I don't want to cut what they're doing, but if they've got a healthy balance that's been built up, maybe what we should do is consider sweeping $1 million of that and putting it in a special allocation so that we can keep these other cultural institutions that are being funded in other ways going, so that it seems to me the money is there. They built up their balance, and I'd like John and his team to look at, and maybe when they come back, if we were to sweep that, and again, we're still going to give them their full allocation of what they would receive, but they've got a very significant balance right now. But if we were to take $1 million or $1.5 million or $2 million or whatever they might recommend, put that in a separate allocation so that we can continue to fund maybe some of these things that I know that are on the chopping block right now, and not cutting but pushing out some of those projects that are in the resort tax plan. So I just wanted to add those comments. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. I don't see anyone's hand up. Okay. All right. Mark?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just a quick comment. I just want to be clear. I'm in support of what Commissioner Richardson said. The comment around debt was sort of apples to apples at a better price, but not extending duration. I'm just seeing if there's an opportunity. It sounds like there might be with that apples to apples trade.
Yeah, Mr. Commissioner, just a few points to make. First of all, on the debt financing, absolutely. We would not just be looking to spread it out over more time. It would be, could we actually generate some real savings? Just a couple observations. One, we completely agree that the goal should be cutting costs, not hitting our reserves. I think that was the philosophy we took in this proposal. We tried to keep a reserve hits to a minimum. And I think, as I said at the beginning, and John, we're not done yet identifying hopefully cuts and whatnot and other savings. But that is our idea, that those reserves are critical because we're going into hurricane season. And we also know after the last few years, anything can impact us. We, you know, we had Zika a couple of years ago, et cetera. So we know how volatile some of these funds are, and we need to have the reserves. Number two, in terms of weekly or biweekly monitoring, we never thought today was a final vote. I think, as John indicated, we really were looking for just sort of approval in the direction we're heading, knowing that some of these things are going to be brought back for commission votes. We're going to be, it's a work in progress. We obviously have to monitor whether or not we ended up being on the right side of the projections or the wrong side. If we reopen, how that affects our revenue. So we know this is a work in progress. We're happy to, as frequently as you want, come back and tweak the numbers and look at that. We also assume that right now we've been fortunate. We've only spent about, I think, $350,000 or $80,000 it was on response to the COVID virus. But we certainly well think that in the weeks and months ahead, particularly as part of coming out, whether it's supporting our cultural organizations, helping our small businesses, we may have to make more of a commitment. Hopefully more of that money will be FEMA eligible in Part B. But we understand that going forward, we probably do have to make some recognition that our expenses on the response side, and hopefully, again, some of that may also be covered out of some of the stimulus money if we can get the rules changed on our availability. I'm very happy to go back with, and I'll take it as suggestion, not as direction, because I think Commissioner Gore was right on that, to look at not just parking, but at all the departments to make sure that we're right-sizing everything, including management. You have my commitment on that. I do think, and I think several of you mentioned this, in terms of not wasting a crisis, this is an opportunity to right-size the government, but also how we budget, because one of the challenges we've had, and this highlights it, is we became very dependent on resort tax and parking revenues, highly volatile funds, potentially, in times like a hurricane or this, to fund recurring important expenses, cultural and other things. So I think we also should use this as an opportunity to look at how we fund, how we utilize parking and resort tax funds in a way that are more resilient going forward, so that our cultural organizations don't suddenly take a huge hit because we have a hurricane or a Zika crisis or whatever in this world of climate change will strike us in the future. And so I think part of what we want to do as part of the fiscal year 21 budget is, in fact, to build that in going forward. And that'll involve some policy changes potentially as well. So we're up to this challenge, I can assure you. And we'll come back next Friday, if that's the desire, with some adjustments based on some of the comments we've gotten today.
Colleagues, are you available next Friday, same time? Get an update on this item?
Yes, this is David. I'm available if we were to do 10 o'clock next Friday, right?
I am too.
Okay, we could do this. If you want to come back next Friday, Jimmy and John, with some more ideas. And in the interim, obviously, you can reach out to any of the commissioners and the mayor for further input. Would it be helpful for us to give you some sort of target? You know, say, Jimmy, give us a 5%, give us a 10% payroll reduction at City Hall and what that would look like, and allow you to try to work off of something like that. Because, I mean, trimming 5% of payroll, those are big dollars. And in any organization, you can always trim 5%. Do you need a guide? I mean, I think we're giving you direction. We want to see some real trimming across the departments. I think all of us have insights into different departments where we see fat. I think none of us have the preference to do this publicly, but I think you're going to get some input from us.
I don't, Commissioner, you don't need to give me a specific number. I think I've gotten a clear message.
And, you know, look, you can make us the bad guy, right? We're asking you to, you know, make a permanent cut in our city's payroll, particularly before we start going to rank and file and unions to ask for concessions from them. We need to be able to show that we, you know, we're going to be fiscally responsible too. Commissioner Richardson, you brought something up that I was going to bring up too. I think we all have to lead by example. I am perfectly comfortable taking whatever minuscule money we make and cutting it during these times and leading by example. If any of my colleagues have an idea on what that would be, I'll support it.
Thank you, Chair. So, you know, a number of our departments, I know the city attorney's office has, they've already offered up, they're going to take their 5%. So I don't want to foist it on anybody, but I think that the mayor and commission suite should offer up the same thing that some of our other departments are offering up to take a 5-day unpaid furlough. Of course, you and I and our colleagues are not going to take a furlough. We're going to keep working, but it will be a reduction, even though we're at the lower end of the scale. I think that we could offer that up. And I think the city manager may, in his plan, he's going to come back next week, maybe should tell us what it would look like if every employee took a 5-day. I know he's going to take a 10-day, and I think a couple other people are taking 10 days, but what would it look like if we ask every, because I don't think we can go to the unions and ask them to take a 5-day furlough unless we're leading by example. And you've already seen the city manager's office do that, the attorney, I think our clerk is doing that. So I'd like to propose our suite do the same thing across the board. And then I'd also like the manager to come back to us next Friday and tell us what it would look like if we were able to ask everybody to take that 5-day in this fiscal year. Thank you.
So can I, Ricky, can I mention something real fast?
Yeah, please.
So I'll go over our budget. You know, first of all, our salaries are hard. I'm not sure 5 days means a lot. We do get a much larger amount, actually, for what's called expenses, but it's actually just income, according to the IRS. So whatever you're going to do, let me know. You can easily just simply say you don't want your expenses right now, because I'm not sure anybody is spending, you know, even if hypothetically you were using it for driving and going out to do things in the community, that's arguably part of the job. I'm not sure anybody's doing that anyway. I already did mine for this month. I've asked to not get that because I don't think it's appropriate, which probably is well more than 5 days. So I'll circulate options as the leader of our division so that you can decide what you want to do. I don't know that. I think it's very symbolic in a sense that we're really not paid freight anyway, but I just said, don't give me my expense money this month, or I'll likely keep doing that. We'll also look at, we have a unoccupied position in our office. I'll talk to Michelle about what to do about that, but I'll circulate something on our side because we ought to lead by example as well. Anyways, I'm checking out. And again, Ricky, thank you very much. Thank you all. Even though it's just a 3-person meeting, I think everybody showed up just to get the briefing again and to hear one another. And Jimmy and John, thank you all very much. We're blessed to have such exceptional leadership.
Mayor, and our condolences, obviously, on your loss and Joan's loss.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, guys. And thank you all for the very nice comments. Joan, my father-in-law, was a great guy, a great doctor, and very beloved in the South Miami community. And I appreciate all the fine things you and residents have said. It made it a lot easier to navigate this. So thank you all.
You will.
Thank you, Mayor. Ricky, just to follow up on what the mayor said, I think our salaries, because they're so small, you know, us taking a 5-day furlough. So I would also propose that we take at least a 5-day furlough on our expenses. The mayor's put all of his in. I will tell you that my plan, because I have another feeding plan, I've been doing a lot of work on feeding our community. I'm planning on putting a significant amount of my expenses for the next few months into feeding the community. So, but I do think that at a minimum, we should propose the 5-day for both in the elected officials in not only our salary, but in the expenses, unless our colleagues differ with that.
Mark.
Yep. No, I just wanted to say I think it's an excellent idea. We do need to lead by example. It sounded like the mayor was going to circulate some options, but I think we should do something. And I'm welcome to join my colleagues in whatever we as a body think makes sense. But it's important that we're part of the solution as well.
Ricky?
Yeah, Mark. Michael.
Okay, thank you. I wanted to follow up on a couple of points. Number one, this is a great exercise, and I agree that we need to lead by example. But what we're talking about is a couple thousand dollars, maybe tens of thousands at the most. What we need to be focusing on is the big ticket items. And going back to the review of employee by employee, I think we also need to be conscious of the fact that we have employees in Miami Beach that make $30,000, $75,000, $100,000, $200,000, $300,000. So as we're looking to cut people's pay, for somebody that's making under $75,000 a year, it's a much bigger impact than for people that are making six-figure incomes at the city. So this isn't a one-size-fits-all solution. We need to really look at how whatever cuts we're making are going to impact employees. And I think there should be some consideration given to people that make more money as opposed to people that make less money. That's my first point. My second point, as we're going to lead by example, our salary and expenses are minimal. If each department is really looking at making cuts, then we need to look at the departments that do the most spending. I don't know what those are. I know in the office of the mayor and commission, the bulk of the spending isn't what goes to us. It's the spending that goes out on the mayor and commission credit cards and the regular expenses that the office is purchasing and buying on that kind of go under the radar. So if we're going to lead by example, and I think we should see about cutting that budget as all departments cut their budgets. Otherwise, for us to say we're going to take a minimal cut off of our minimal salary, it doesn't do much. So my two points are, let's look at the big picture items. Let's look at the budget as a whole, not little specific things that we might be able to make a political soundbite, but something that's good across the board. And let's be considerate of those that make less money as opposed to those that make more money.
Yeah, I agree with you on that, Commissioner Gongora. Even in my company, fortunately, we haven't had to implement it. But when we looked at having to cut, salaries, we stepped it up. So people under, say, $50,000 weren't going to be touched. And then it escalated. And then the higher income people took more of a cut because everyone's got basic minimum expenses, whether it's, you know, food or gas that you have to be able to pay for. So I think not everybody should be treated equally. The people at the top should have to take a bigger hit than the people at the bottom. And I would try to have a minimum threshold, whatever you think best, John and Jimmy, whether it's 50,000, whatever the threshold is, where those people, you know, don't have to sacrifice and the others shoulder a little bit more of the burden.
I think that's right, Chairman. I think one size doesn't fit all. And I think I would hope that when the manager comes back to us next week, he can give us some various options. So, for example, somebody making $1,000 a week, that's an annual salary of $52,000. Maybe we don't ask those folks to take a five-day furlough. But I hope, Mr. Manager, you'll bring back different options that we can evaluate.
Yeah, and I think you saw that when I announced the furloughs for management team, I didn't do the same thing for the rest of the unclassified who are at lower scales of salary. I just did no COLA there. So we will take that into account, absolutely.
Thank you. I can open this up to the public. Let me see how many hands we have up. I only see Daniel Ciraldo's hand. Daniel, are you on? Do you want to speak?
Yes. Hi, Commissioner Areola. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, thank you. Thank you all for the conversation. I was able to log into Zoom, and so hopefully you could hear me all okay. I wanted to thank John for the analysis. I think it's really smart, all of this analysis being done. I wanted to just mention a couple of brief things. One is that it would be very helpful to have the analysis of the actual so far year to date vis-a-vis the resort tax. I know that I have the resort tax through February, and the resort tax lags by 1 month. And as of February, it was up 7% over the year before. And that does not include the Super Bowl, which was in February, but that number will come in March. And I don't know, John, if you already have the number for the Super Bowl, but I think it's important not just to look at the budget, but how we did so far. I know that period of December through February, for us, it was like a blur. There was Art Basel, there was Art Deco Weekend, there was Super Bowl. It was just so busy in South Beach. And I have a feeling that translated to the numbers and that the resort taxes have been pretty strong this year. So I'd love to know more about the March numbers, which would reflect the Super Bowl. And then final things is that as far as John mentioned, you know, there were already expenses that were committed, but there might be some savings. So I was a little surprised to see for Art Deco Weekend and a recommendation for the event that already happened to cut $6,230 from the sponsorship. So all of that money, so our event was January 17th to the 19th. Many of you know you were there. It was a great event. And we've spent all that money already. It was about 3 months ago. So I would ask if you would just consider not cutting that part of the sponsorship because, you know, we've already spent the money and, you know, we'd really appreciate that accommodation. We're looking forward to opening, you know, as soon as you guys think is okay. Hopefully it won't be 3 months. Hopefully we get back on track. Miami Beach is a resilient city. After 9/11, we bounced back pretty quickly. After hurricanes, we bounced back pretty quickly. I'm hopeful that the city has that recipe, that magic recipe to bounce back. So thank you all, and those are my comments.
Okay, thank you, Daniel. I think we're gonna be wrestling with this for at least a few more weeks. So thank you for your comments. I think Ron Starkman had his hand up. Ron, are you on? Ron, if you're on, depress mute. Okay. Not sure. He sent us a text. Okay. Anybody else from the public?
If Ron is on the phone, he should press *9 to raise his hand and let us know who he is.
Okay, Ron, if you're watching, press *9 on your phone to join.
Hello, okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you now, Ron. Good morning.
Okay, yeah, I didn't know about the *9, so that's good.
Yeah, my apologies, I should have said that. And then we have Daniel Baisha and Alex Fernandez who want to join too. So you guys are on deck. Ron, go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Ricky. This is Ron Starkman. I'm chairman of the Budget Advisory Committee. We haven't had a chance to meet as a committee to look at this plan, but I wanted to at least share a few personal thoughts. I'm going to say at the outset that I was really pleased with the direction of the conversation today. I was concerned a little that there might be pressures to try to use up more of the reserve and to maintain spending. And was very encouraged by the fact that you all really were not only looking to not dip deeper into the reserve, but were even looking for ways to try to use less of it. And just to reiterate a couple of reasons why that's important is that reserve is there for other kinds of events like hurricanes and so forth. The city doesn't carry insurance. And if you had a hurricane, you would not only have the lost revenue from tourism, but you would have all the costs for the repair or replacement of the facilities and infrastructure that's damaged. So that could be even a bigger hit. The second point would be that we've had tight budgets the last few years. As you know, last year, the property tax increase wasn't sufficient to maintain the current service level. And there was some creative steps done to try to get the budget to balance. So even before this financial shock, the city's budget was under stress. And there's really, if we were to use that reserve, it's hard to see how there would be any way to replenish it in the near term. So if we're not going to be able to replenish it, then it'll have other knock-on effects, including on our bond rating, and we could be in even more serious shape. So very happy that's the key focus, and just want to encourage your work in terms of looking for ways to reduce staff, cut expenses, hold the line on non-discretionary, and as a result, the cultural arts. I mean, the fact that they have a $4 million balance that they haven't spent while other areas might be suffering. And by the way, this year we just increased their allocation through the capital budget. When you have capital expenditures, by developers and so forth, there's more money going into the coffers. So they're not spending all they have. You know, it kind of questions whether we got the right balance there in terms of supporting the cultural arts. So that's really it. Thank you all for your good work, and I look forward to continuing to be involved.
Thank you, Ron. Daniel Vaisha, you're on deck. Are you still on?
Yes, I am here. Thank you, all commissioners and city manager and city staff, for all the hard work that you continue to do during these times. I am very much more on the conservative side. I think there's still a lot of hard times ahead for our city and our state and nation. I think we need to continue to be extremely conservative. The economy has been shut down, and it's going to be very difficult for it to come back online with the expectations that we all have it will. As a fellow business owner, I've had to make very difficult decisions, and I think no one's immune from what we have to do. So I appreciate the tone of the conversations and the reality that each of the commissioners are taking seriously. I think it would be very beneficial for the public in the future. I think it is a city manager function to decide on the cuts, but I think reviewing the material and the information would be beneficial for us to understand the employee levels by department, maybe not specific salaries, but just better understanding what those counts are by department and understanding where the city manager is looking to make additional cuts. I think it's important for the city to maintain its services and functions and quality of life for its residents. But again, we are looking at some trying times, and I think it's going to be prudent for us to continue looking at what you've looked at today and find ways to continue finding cuts to make sure that we can survive the coming year or at least couple of years moving forward. So again, thank you all for the hard work you're doing and representing the interests of the city and its residents. And I support everything that you've discussed today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Daniel. Alex Fernandez, you're on deck. Alex, you're on mute. You there?
There we go. Can you hear me now?
And then, yes, just before you go, whoever is last four digits, 0710, you're on deck. Don't have your name.
Okay. Good morning, Mr. Chair, and to the members of the committee and to the administration. And thank you all for the hard work that you're doing on behalf of the community during these very unprecedented times. I just wanted to point out the importance as you're looking at these very important cuts. The essential services to our community, those that relate to public health and public safety, the importance of preserving those important level of services so that we make sure that while we weather the storm, we continue being safe and we continue being healthy throughout our community. And to take those into consideration, to give some guidance, perhaps, to the city manager on what might be some of those essential services that we certainly, as a community, wouldn't want to be touched, including those having to do with homelessness, which is a topic that is being spoken about a lot in the community. So I just wanted to support all of you in the work that you're doing. Thank you for the work you're doing. Thank you to the city attorneys. It's good to hear that our city attorneys are making that 5% sacrifice for all of us, all the taxpayers in the city of Miami Beach. And again, just that message, look at those essential services that you certainly don't want to have touched so that we make sure that we continue having a very healthy and a very safe city as we weather through these very unprecedented times. Thank you to all.
Thank you, Alex. Whoever is phone number 0710.
Yes, Commissioner Jerry Libin. How are you?
Oh, hey, Jerry.
First of all, thank you guys for letting us participate in this meeting. And I want to say that I think everything that you guys talked about is a good initial start. But there's a glaring, part that really wasn't talked about at all. And I don't think you have any time to waste about looking at foreclosures and companies that are going to never come back, that are going to have a dramatic impact. As it was reported by John, 52% of the overall budget is really in the general fund. And, when businesses don't come back and property values are going to be drastically reduced, it's going to have a serious long-term impact on the city's resources. And I really suggest that you need to start now. I would like to recommend that you contract a company to as a consultant to put together a long-term impact study that will look at 5 and 10 years out and how the city is going to deal with that. I would like to also suggest that you should include in a study group on that business leaders from the Chamber of Commerce, along with city staff, to analyze the complete impact that you're going to have and how you're going to make up those differences and deficits over the next decade, perhaps. Besides, by the way, besides the property tax, there's going to be all kinds of fees that the city collects from businesses that are not going to be collected when those businesses aren't here. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Jerry. Be well. Anybody else from the public? I don't see any more hands. Are there any more hands? Okay. Colleagues, any final words before we conclude this item? Anything?
Ricky, I just want to confirm we're going to reconvene next Friday at 10 o'clock to talk about this again and get an update from the city, right?
Yes.
I agree with that. Yes. Thanks so much.
Okay. John, Jimmy, is that okay? Because you guys have to do the work. Is that enough time for you to have a go back and come up with some ideas?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And by the way, just to we obviously have put a priority on preserving essential services, public safety, public health. Just referring to Alex, clearly that's a priority. But yes, we've been doing a lot of work on this, and we'll come back next Friday, continue the conversation.
By the way, I just want to reiterate, John and Jimmy, great work on this. I mean, I know there's a lot of work went into this, and I don't want you to think that we're not appreciative and not impressed by the work. Very, very impressive. But we just want to give you some additional input where you might do a little bit more.
I think so too, Chair. I think you guys did a great job. This is the first pass, and the fact that we're not here for 8 hours giving comments is amazing. So I think you guys did a terrific job with this. Thank you so much. I know you guys have been working hard on it.
Thanks. Okay, our next item, I guess I'll just call it 300 Alton Road, for lack of a better term. Who's going to present? Who's going to tee this up? Is it Eric Carpenter? How are we going to do this?
Yes, sir.
By the way, does everyone want, or at least I need a quick bio break. So if you indulge me, I'm going to step away for a minute. I'll be right back.
Sure. Do you want me to wait, or do you want me to proceed?
Yeah, why don't we, what time is it exactly? It's 11:45, a 3-minute break.
Let's take a five minute break. Okay. 5 minute break.
11:50. We'll reconvene.
Sounds good. Sure. I'll go ahead and tee this up. I'm going to try and keep this relatively brief. I know we have a presentation from the team that came to the city with this idea, and then we've got our city attorneys online that'll kind of walk us through the process that it takes. But just to frame it up, we were approached by a team of folks that have put together an interesting proposal that would include an extension to the lease on the Miami Beach Marina. Right now that's proposed as a 99-year extension to a lease, and also a redevelopment of the upland portion of the property adjacent to the lease. What's interesting about the proposal is that it brings a significant number of capital improvements to the marina to keep the marina relevant. It also brings a substantial improvement to the highest and best use of that upland property, which would result obviously in some significant tax increases, and it would also give us some other economic benefits, job production, number of different things. But basically, the concept here is, do we want to entertain a potential deal regarding the marina and the upland property there at 300 Alton? And obviously, we're very early on in the process right now. We received a term sheet from the development team approximately 2 weeks ago, which is attached to the agenda item. Our team here at the city has engaged some appraisers, but that work has really just started. And obviously, we are in some interesting times now which could create some challenges to meeting some of the deadlines we've been talking about as far as putting this on a referendum. But we wanted to hear from the development team and then just kind of take the temperature of the elected body. So with that, I'd kind of like to hand it over to David Martin and let him kind of walk you through the project.
David, before you jump in, can I ask our city attorney or Jimmy, but I think our city attorney, talk to us a little bit about the timeline and why it's important that we're hearing this today. We're not insensitive to the crisis that's happening, but because this would have to go to voter referendum, there's a timeline that we have to be observant of. Could you just walk us through that and why we're actually hearing this today?
Commissioner Arriola, can you hear me, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, yes.
Hi, this is Raul Aguila, and then I'll let Rafael Paz speak. The reason we are before you here today, obviously, because this is the first step. Because this transaction involves not only the extension of the marina lease and other terms that we hope to renegotiate within the marina lease, as well as the sale of air rights above the marina for the development of the residential retail component that Mr. Martin is also developing. Those two issues in and of themselves, the sale of air rights and the extension of the lease term, require referendums under our charter. The next referendum that we have is in August, which we were not aiming for. But after August, the next regularly scheduled referendum is the presidential election in November. So those are the reasons that this transaction is subject to referendum. There may be a third issue, which we will be trying to work out, that may involve a requested increase in floor area ratio that's necessary for the project. And that may be a third ballot question. So we're talking about three ballot questions. More than anything, though, what I want this committee to concentrate on now is putting the referendum issue aside. We're all very conscious of that timeline. This is a very significant transaction for the city, in as much as we have not been able to really take a look at and negotiate terms in the marina lease that we would like to negotiate more in favor of the city for over 25 years. So from that point of view, this is something that we want to consider thoughtfully and carefully so that the city can make a better deal. In addition to that, not only as part of this transaction is the developer going to agree to renegotiate terms in the marina lease by way of getting a 99-year lease term. But there's also a sale of air rights involved, which means that there's a project that's basically going to be developed on top of the marina. So that a private project. So that adds an additional layer of complexity to this. There's also various designs, which set forth more green space and other issues. So I want us to be conscious of the referendum and the ballot deadlines. But what I really want from the committee is input on terms and that's why I'm recommending that obviously today is day one and David's got a PowerPoint presentation that he wants to present for this project. We're very excited about the project, but I don't want you to be dictated or feel compressed by the ballot, by the November referendum deadline, because there's a lot to cover here and there are a lot of outstanding issues, some of which we have outlined already in the white paper that we prepared in your packet today, which is in reaction to the initial term sheet prepared by the developer. Rafael, do you want to add anything to that?
No, only that if the timeline that the developer is going to show you is targeting a November referendum, the deadline would be July 31 to submit the ballot questions, which means that we would need to go through our entire approval process for the negotiation, the drafting, and finalizing all of the agreements under the robust process that we have in place in the city code for public outreach and input. We would need to get that done by July 29th, by the July 29th commission meeting, in order to meet that deadline. So we have gotten started and identified in the issues list everything that we want to sit down with a developer or have a Zoom call with a developer to commence our discussions. But we do have a lot of work to do, and we look forward to do that.
Yes. So in other words, we have about, as a commission, about 4 months to deliberate, discuss financial terms and everything else related to land use with this developer. But ultimately, we have all the way through November, and this developer will have to go and present to the public and get public support for this project, because ultimately the residents are the ones who are going to vote for this or not. It's the next 4 months are really largely in our ballpark to see if we can come to terms with this developer, but there's still sufficient time beyond July to go out and do the public presentations and gather support or not for this project. So I mean, it's a tight timeline, but it's reasonable. But I don't want us to necessarily be the reason we don't put something forward to the public if we decide that this is a good idea to ask the voters to consider. Okay, colleagues, anything you want to add, or should we turn it over to David?
This is David. I'm ready to hear from David.
Yeah. I mean, David clearly has not been to a barber during this lockdown. So strong beard game, David.
Yes, sir. I just want to, hope everyone's safe and healthy. I want to thank you for the opportunity to briefly discuss this proposal with you today. My name is David Martin, resident of Miami Beach, and I'm here representing my firm, Terra, as well as my partner, Suntex. The challenge and opportunity before our community is to make sure we understand and deal with the immediate needs of the community, but at the same time balance what the future recovery is going to look like so our city can rebound vigorously and unified. I'm here to talk to you about the marina, the proposed lease, and the proposed mixed-use redevelopment. Your agenda packet includes a term sheet, PowerPoint presentation that includes terms as well as fiscal and economic benefits. I want to talk to you about the role of the Miami Beach Marina, how we envision reimagining it for tomorrow's Miami Beach. The marina is an important marine facility for the beach. It's a community asset, and it's a significant economic engine. It was built over 40 years ago as a first step to stimulate the redevelopment as part of the South Point redevelopment plan. Since then, the marina has been a catalyst for one of the most successful urban renewal projects in the nation. Today, the South of Fifth neighborhood is one of the city's premier residential mixed-use neighborhoods. The marina recognizes that it must play a role in maintaining and enhancing the quality of life in our neighborhood today and well into the future. For some time now, we've been planning a major capital investment in the marina that will address sea level rise, resiliency, and maintain our competitive edge as a world-class marine and yachting facility, as well as a community amenity and economic engine. We have begun community outreach to vital interested stakeholders, including the South of Fifth neighborhood. When our country was confronted with a paralyzing public health crisis, which has affected all of our lives and significantly threatens the citizens of the beach, as well as its economy and the city coffers, we met with opinion leaders on a one-on-one basis, but with the onset of COVID, we were forced to cancel several planned meetings. We are committed to continue these meetings through whatever means necessary, and we commit to doing so before the commission makes its decision. The burden is on us, and we recognize that without community support, this project will not move forward. Although our current health crisis presents immediate challenges, we cannot stop planning for our future and the unified effort at economic recovery that our community, local businesses, and city government will require. Our planning was centered around community concerns. What does the community need? What public benefits can we provide? And what will the community support? I'm now gonna share a screen of the PowerPoint presentation. So here, as we come up for an automatic extension of the current marina lease on January 1st, 2022, we have approached the city about the lease terms to provide a lease extension that will make it economically feasible for a major capital upgrade, allowing us to invest over $35 million in infrastructure improvements, sea level rise mitigation, improved wayfinding, and beautification. If you notice, one of the important economic issues of a lease is obviously the rent. Currently, at the time that this lease was signed in 1983, there was a minimum annual guaranteed rent of $320,000, and we've proposed to increase that by $1 million with incremental inflation adjustments on an annual basis. We also have shown to increase our per gallon contribution to the city from sale of gas and diesel. And also want to point out that in the city's white paper, they did mention, of course, for climate change reasons, potential electric boating. And that definitely needs to be considered as our term sheet was a preliminary document to start the discussion with the city. We also, if you note, the lump sum payment that is going to be made to the city, we estimate approximately $50 million associated with those air rights, but we understand that the city is commissioning two independent appraisals to be commissioned in order to evaluate that value and ensure the proper treatment and responsible treatment of this transaction. Just to summarize the proposed program, we have marina improvements to reposition and rebrand the marina. We have the capital investment, $35 million. We have infrastructure and capital improvements. We have baywalk improvements and enhanced entrance wayfinding, marina and baywalk lighting. The upland of mixed-use development is going to have approximately 2 acres of publicly accessible open green space, also with a 1 acre at-grade fully permeable bayfront marina park. Currently, there's over 60,000 square feet of retail and office. We are reducing that to a neighborhood oriented retail and office project with 30,000 square feet of retail and 15,000 square feet of office, approximately a 20% reduction, as well as 60 residences. One of the most important things I think with this project and with this pandemic is jobs and the job creation that projects like this and others that I'm sure the city's going to be evaluating needs to think about. So here we have total non-recurring jobs that are being created, 111, total jobs created that are permanent annual jobs, 261. The total payroll of the non-recurring jobs is approximately $112 million, and the total payroll of the annual jobs that will be recurring is $9.5 million. The total gross domestic product of this development and of this upland development is $146 million, and the total recurring gross domestic product is approximately $16 million. This study was performed by Miami Economic Associates, who's a reputable firm that has been advising cities throughout our county. As it relates to the incremental tax benefits, in addition to the payroll and gross domestic product and also increased lease rents, we are showing a non-recurring fiscal benefit of $2.5 million and a recurring benefit that will benefit the city, Miami-Dade County, and Miami-Dade County schools, approximately almost $3 million to the city of Miami Beach per year. And then the table's pretty explanatory, you know, the high twos on the Miami-Dade County And then obviously for our Miami-Dade County Public Schools, a really big benefit. So annually, this project would generate around $9.7 million in recurring incremental revenue. To summarize our community benefits, we have a marina park, creating a new bayfront park and additional green space. We have our marina, taking the Miami Beach Marina to the next level with the capital investment. We have our Baywalk, which is really a treasured community asset and really helps the quality of life. We are reprogramming the existing retail and neighborhood amenity to be more in keeping with the surrounding neighborhood, and also be an asset, but keeping it neighborhood focused rather than regional. We have our $35 million capital improvements. We have our fair market value payment to the city for air rights. We have our annual tax revenues. We have in total short-term economic and fiscal benefits of close to $260 million. And we have around 2,372 jobs created, of which 2,000 approximately are non-recurring and 261 recurring jobs. When we emerge from this public health crisis, and I'm going to stop sharing the screen now, and I could go back. When we emerge from this public health crisis, and we will, the city of Miami Beach will need ways to stimulate economic recovery, restore our tourism industry, and create new revenue streams to replace the tens of millions or hundreds of millions of dollars of lost tax revenue. From our standpoint, community outreach has been the driving force for our planning efforts from Project Inception. And that's why we will vigorously resume our pre-COVID active community engagement to all stakeholders before the City Commission is asked to put this matter on the ballot for our voters to make the ultimate decision through every channel available to us. We know that without community support, this project will not proceed, and we appreciate the opportunity to share our vision and earn your support. One final point. We received the city's comments on the term sheets approximately 48 hours ago. We wanted to say we appreciate their thoughtfulness, their attention, and they asked very good questions. We believe we have some answers to those questions, but also others that we will work through with city staff and consultants. And we would like the opportunity to address that with them. You know, in closing, we're going to take the marina and want to work with you and collaborate with the city, collaborate with the residents to really make the marina first class, to enhance the Baywalk, to enhance the uplands into a neighborhood-oriented retail and office, and improve the financial terms that we're going to commit to the marina and also create the jobs that are necessary that our community needs. So while we manage through this crisis, we want to think about healing that damage, repairing that sacrifice that we have made, city has made, and done an amazing job, all being asked to do more, stressed, stretched to the max. But this is an opportunity, in my view, to rise to the occasion, to lead our future, to plan for our recovery, and to honor the sacrifices everybody's making by being able to be there fiscally sound and rebound the economy. We're asking you today to vote not to a final deal, and not to a binding deal, but to vote to proceed, to allow us to collaborate with the city staff and with you and with the residents in this community. Your leadership as commissioners is needed to make sure, you know, that we address the immediate needs of the community, but also ensure the future recovery so our city can rebound. We thank you for the opportunity to share our vision, and I look forward to earning your trust and support. Thank you so much.
David, wonderful presentation, very eloquent words. Thank you for sharing your sentiments. I know you're a Miami Beach resident, and I know how much the city means to you. So thank you for considering further investment in our city. Colleagues, comments?
I have a couple of questions, Chair. First question is maybe for you or for Eric or the administration, and that is, what do you see as the process, let's say if we move this today, I think it's in land use in early May, and then would it go to another committee? Would it come back to us? Would it go to the commission? What do we see as the process?
Commissioner, I'd like to answer that if I may.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. Yep.
And then, you know, have Raphael and Eric add, but My feeling would be, obviously, you know, that you authorize us to continue to negotiate with David's team. But I would like to see this stay in finance for now. What is in land use and what is going to land use are the accompanying LDR amendments that are necessary to also allow this project. But ultimately, this is a financial deal. So the components that we're looking at, the moving parts, are much the same as we looked at with 500 Alton Road. It has financial components, it has land use components, and it'll be in both committees. I would like to see this stay at the finance committee for now, because I'm sure Eric is going to speak as to what has already been done and what is pending, which are the appraisals, which is something very important that this committee really needs to review, because I know that David is talking about a $50 million purchase price for the air rights. And I think that's great as a minimum required threshold, but we really need to see what the appraisals are going to bode for both the sale of the air rights and the rent. So I'd like the finance committee to authorize us to continue to negotiate and to keep this in committee.
Thank you, Raul. I'm glad you said that, because I do think it should stay in the finance committee, because we're going to have some appraisals. I think they're going to be two appraisals, two independent appraisals, and then we're going to have to, with the chair's leadership, structure what we think would be a fair deal with Mr. Martin. But for me, I'm going to be very interested to hear what land use has to say, because I think that could have a bearing on what we do in terms of structuring a deal. So I have one question for Mr. Martin, if I could. So thank you for the presentation. I appreciate that. As you were talking through it, a question popped in my brain about sustainability and sea level rise issues. So if you could talk a little bit more about that, because I know on the upland, I think your proposal is to take the air rights. And maybe we haven't thought about all the legal terms and so forth, and maybe Raul can jump back in here after you speak. If you were to take the air rights, would the city still have responsibility for sea level rise mitigation, and maybe we haven't thought through all that, but just speak to that a little bit, please.
Sure. Thank you, Commissioner. Sea level rise and water resiliency is an important part of, I think, South Florida's DNA long term. In all our projects today, what we're looking to do is enhance the amount of green space that we have on all properties. Today, the property really is not contributing to the stormwater management infrastructure or the water storage needs of this neighborhood. Currently, a large portion of the property is a parking lot, as well as a 4 or 5 story building. And so for us, what we're looking to do is enhance that green space and also provide water storage initiatives, as well as the marina having, through its upgrades and over the years, being able to upgrade to floating docks that can handle that sea level rise condition that we know is coming ahead of us in the future. So the idea with this project and the responsibility of the development and today is that we would develop the sea level rise mitigation at our cost. We would provide the green space not only for water storage and water percolation and water polishing to have clean water, when it does enter the bay, but also, be able to have a beautiful green space so that our residents can now have a community place, an asset that they can go to and enjoy and really utilize the entire property. So the property is approximately 3 acres or more. And what we're looking to do is expand and use the entire property so that it can become a community asset, and so that the community can use it, so that the seniors that live next door, the residents that live next door, and the residents that live not only in the South of Fifth neighborhood, but other parts of Miami Beach can not only enjoy the marina and Baywalk, but also have a place for them to settle. The idea is water resiliency is an important part of this project. We have design consultants that we've engaged that are experts in this field and that we will be presenting for land use. But I will say that this project, even post-referendum, if we had the opportunity and the city felt that, that they liked the concept and the idea, would still have to go through vigorous design review boards, vigorous planning review boards, even after that process. But we are prepared today to have that discussion and to present those ideas. So I'm looking forward to doing that with the community and with yourselves and the city administration.
Thank you. Raul, did you want to add anything to that?
Well, I could address that. Commissioner, the term sheet included a proposal for capital improvements of $30 million that would be spread out over 35 years. And one of our initial questions is, well, what are those capital improvements and can we get more specificity? And certainly if resiliency projects are something that the commission would want us to prioritize, we can make sure that the documents will reflect that and work with David to develop the plan.
Okay. And then, Chair, if I could, I have another question. And I don't know who will know this, but do we know when the two independent appraisals will be back? Is there a date that's been forecast for that?
I can answer that question. At this point, we've engaged with the appraisers. We're trying to collect some basic data from the marina facility that the appraisers would need to help generate their numbers. We're also going to need some information from the developer. And as soon as we get all of that information, the appraisers have told us it'll take approximately 4 weeks.
So we're looking about maybe mid-May, is that right?
Correct.
Okay. So, I know Commissioner Samuel may want to add some comments or questions, but Chair, I want to support this today so it can move forward with the understanding that it would come back to finance. I do think finance is the place it should be to discuss all the detailed terms. I think having the appraisal is going to be very important for us in terms of structuring a deal, because we're not going to know how much money will be available until we get the appraisal. So, I'm very interested in what land use will have to say about the use of the property. And also in moving the project forward, I would like, as Rafael mentioned, that we could have we specifically address sustainability and sea level rise issues as part of the structured deal. So, I think this is important that we're having this conversation, and I think we should authorize the city to continue having these discussions.
Thank you. Commissioner Samuelin, do you have some comments?
I do. And in short, I'm also supportive of continuing this discussion and keeping it at finance. A part of that is based on our experience we've had with this developer and the reputation he has. And I think that gives us confidence that it's worth spending this time. I just want to highlight three priorities, which I believe my colleague, Commissioner Richardson, touched on, the presentation did, but I just want to highlight for emphasis. Number one is community engagement. And I know the developer was working on this, and no one knew we were going to get into a pandemic and have this issue in front of us, but we need to continue to push on that. I will be listening closely to the administration's review of neighborhood impacts and listening directly to the community. So that will be my first thought. My second, very much in line with, again, what Commissioner Richardson mentioned around sea level rise and resiliency. This should be a marquee project that the world looks at in terms of what we did for sea level rise. And I think that this should really be a game-changing event, and that we really make that a focus of what we do. So that was my second thought. My third is related to the appraisals. And I'm going to harken back to action that the commission took back in June of 2019, as we knew we were getting into more complex public-private partnerships. And that is the requirement that when we go through our appraisals and our analysis, that we are looking at the value conferred to the private party so that we can ensure that the public benefit is commensurate. So happy to take that discussion, you know, either here or offline, but I just want to make sure that we are adhering to the spirit of that June 2019 resolution. How big is the bread box for everyone? And is the public ensuring sufficient benefits? But with that, I believe this project warrants continued discussion. I look forward to it.
Okay. Let me see. Anybody else from the administration? Any of my colleagues besides Commissioner Samuelin and Richardson want to speak? I don't know who's still on. Michael, please.
Sure. No, I'm really interested in learning more, and I support the direction of the city attorney, and I'll be curious to hear what Finance Committee comes back with. This is not a deal that we were looking for, but it's a deal that was brought to us, and I agree with the comments that were made. You know, obviously, David has a wonderful reputation and has worked on many projects in our city, so we need to understand what this project is, you know, and as Commissioner Samuelin said, for me, it's going to be very important to know the public benefits and to really understand how we're going to be able to do the public outreach in this time of coronavirus, because I'm going to want to have at least some public input before I vote to put something on a ballot. I'm going to have to feel some sense of security that it's something good for the voters to weigh in on. But I'm interested in moving forward.
Okay. Anybody else? Is Mickey still on? Or Commissioner Minor? Commissioner Minor, would you like to say anything?
I'm still on. I agree with the comments. Thank you for the presentation. It was it's well thought out. I know the administration had some questions, and I'm sure David will be getting back to them. And I agree. Obviously, the neighborhood association, the South of Fifth Neighborhood Association, I know wants to follow up, and certainly all residents, since this is going to be a referendum matter. And I know we'll be doing that in short order. It's difficult in this time to do that, but certainly that's a necessary step in this process. But thanks. I'm excited about the project, at least as it's laid out initially.
Yeah, I'll share my thoughts. There's a lot I like about the project for many reasons. I mean, you know, the current facility is clearly outdated. I don't think it's, you know, appropriate for, you know, the neighborhood it's in. I mean, it's an outdated building. So anything we can do to make it, you know, more in line with what's developed over the past couple decades there in the South of Fifth neighborhood, having, you know, the marina be brought up to world-class standards is very appealing to me. Clearly, the economic benefit to the city, very attractive, especially in this time. Having additional green space park built and a resilient project, very, very attractive to me. So the one question I have for you, David, is where are you now in your communications with particularly the South of Fifth neighborhood, who'd be the most impacted by this? Because I don't want us to spend a lot of our time working through this if there's strong opposition towards the project.
I appreciate that, Commissioner. There has been some discussion with the leadership, some of the complications with this pandemic and the stay-at-home order that have been issued, as well as you know, how we're going to restart this economy and restart society, you know, post-pandemic or really you know within the next 30 days. You know, what are the rules going to be? Physical distancing, masks, all the initiatives. I know you all have been working very hard and stressed out on in the administration as well, is about what is appropriate, what's right for our community. My goal is to use any and all means that I have necessary in order, whether it's electronic, video, physical, a presence. But I'm going to really take the cues from the leaders of the South of Fifth Neighborhood Association, the leaders of the President's Council. There are several active community leaders that I respect and admire. And my goal is to continue the dialogue pre-COVID, but really try to expand it as much as I can to properly get as much of this project to everyone. I do think that that it has a lot of attractive benefits, not only financially, but also to the residents, based on a lot of the design from a green space perspective. I do agree that during this COVID stay-at-home order, it is not easy. I you know, really wanted to plan a SOFNA meeting for April, and obviously we weren't able to do that. I am hopeful that over the next 45 to 60 days, I could work with the leadership and the community to really get this this message out. My goal is that that we don't put our city on pause, in our lives on pause, really, because, you know, at the end of the day, I think we need to, you know, really deal with some of the challenges that this has all caused all of us, including my organization and all the small businesses and residents that are making a lot of sacrifices. So, you know, my goal is to try to minimize the sacrifices during these outreach, and whether it's Zoom, whether it's websites, whether it's video, whether it's physically distance enforced meetings. And we're also working on some technology, for instance, on our construction sites, in order to maintain and enforce and compliance on physical distancing. I think those are all important matters that I think we all need to work on. And I look forward to the discussion. And my goal is to communicate with everyone. And to be perfectly frank, the community does not want this. Neither do I. I believe we've put together a project that really meets a lot of the needs that I think the community wants. But obviously, if the community does not want to move forward with this project, neither do I. So I'm really looking forward to the continued dialogue with everyone. And I just want to thank you for all your comments.
Thank you for, you know, continuing to believe in our city and investing in our city, especially during these times. I know you're a resident. I know how important the future health and quality of life of our city is for you personally and your family. So thank you. I would again encourage you, get that outreach started right away, because if there's going to be opposition, I think we would like to know as soon as possible, because we've got a full plate ahead of us for many, many months. And if this is dead on arrival, I'd like to know that sooner rather than later. I don't suspect that it is. I think from what I've heard from some of the South of Fifth folks, they're intrigued by this. So I do think you probably have a really good shot at gaining support down there. And I don't know, colleagues, if you've heard anything from, your friends South of Fifth. Is there an appetite for this? Do we know?
You know, if I may, Mr. Chair, at this point, I really don't know. And it's just, you know, no one's been engaged. Obviously, no one's together. And as I said, the developer's been trying to do the outreach. But the short answer is, I'm very curious what's on the minds of the community. I've yet to hear from them.
Yeah, and just to add my comment on that. So I've learned that with these types of projects, oftentimes you hear opposition more than you hear support. So I would say I have not heard any opposition to date on this, but I too would be very curious to hear all the comments from South of Fifth, pro and con. So that we can consider that, but I have not heard from anyone opposing the project.
Chair, if I may speak, I've had a couple of initial discussions, very sort of cursory discussions with South of Fifth about this, and I know they and David Martin mentioned this. They certainly want to continue the dialogue and have a fulsome discussion about it. I think, as has been expressed on this in this meeting, they're intrigued by it. There's some definite very positives to the neighborhood. Obviously, south of 5th is most directly impacted in that it's in their, literally in their backyard. But I think they just want to make sure they sort of have a seat at the table, which David Martin has clearly expressed in this call. And I look forward to hearing more about those discussions.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay. All right. Let me see. Is there, not that this is open to the public, but if there's anybody in the public who'd want to speak, I see a couple hands. I'm sorry. Daniel Seraldo, you have your hands up. Why don't you go? And then following you, someone with the last four digits of 4422 is asking to speak. You're on deck. Daniel, you're up.
Thank you, Ricky, and to the committee. First, just a general comment. I love the Zoom meetings. I think it would be even more helpful if all members of the public would be able to participate via the video feature. I saw David was connected to video, and I hope maybe for the future meetings, we could all have that same benefit of, you know, a full view. Although I will say my hair doesn't look too great today. But that's just a general comment. So
my hair is not so good either, Daniel, so don't worry.
All right, thank you. So as far as this project, personally, I had not heard much about it, so I appreciate that David is doing outreach to the local neighborhood. It will eventually, if the commission likes it, it will eventually go on the ballot, and all voters of Miami Beach will have to vote on whether this is a project that they would support. I think some of the questions that may be interesting is sort of, you know, looking at the progress on the latest projects. We've had quite a few very massive projects approved lately. 8701 Collins, the Convention Center Hotel is a huge project. The 5th and Alton is another astronomically huge project. So I think probably, you know, the residents are going to want to see what has been the progress with those projects, how have those projects been as far as timeline, and how have they benefited the community. As far as resiliency, I think sea level rise is important, but I think this pandemic has shown us all that there's also personal and economic resiliency. And so it'd be great to expand this to think about things like affordable housing component, a workforce housing component, so that our model in Miami Beach of resiliency is not just a park with a luxury high rise, but something more than that. And I think we're a progressive place, and we should try to push for the most resiliency possible. Then the final question is, I see a height increase is contemplated, and I'm curious, what is the current height zoned? And I see they want 225 feet. So I'll be happy to review all the details and hopefully hear from the public. And thanks for letting me comment.
Okay. Next was last four digits of 4422. You're on deck. You're on.
Ricky, this is Ron Starkman.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, Ron.
Yep, no problem. So I wanted to focus mainly on the financial aspects, the considerations here. Though I am a South of 5th resident, and I know David will do a good job of reaching out to the neighborhood. I think it's interesting that the president of SOFNA now, Murray Peter, is also the president of Murano Grande, which is right next door. So you're going to get it's going to affect nearby buildings, Rebecca Towers and Murano, but it may have different effects on the neighborhood as a whole. So I think there's various dynamics here to take into account. In terms of the financial side, and Mark Chameleon mentioned the change to the ordinance that we made, which says that we should look at these projects from the perspective of what is the increased value to the developer, which is something I strongly supported. One of my disappointments with 500 Alton was that basically all the money or value was put into just the neighboring park, and there wasn't anything additional there for the city to use in this capital budget, which is sorely needed. I thought there was enough value in that project to have a larger contribution. But in this case, there's going to be substantially more money generated than would be spent right on site through the sale of air rights. And I would further comment that, let's not over-engineer or spend excess amount of money just on the site. Let's do what makes sense economically. If there's more value to resiliency and spending, taking some of that money that they might spend there and putting it into another project somewhere else in the city, then that might make more sense, but not to, so basically not to overspend on what we do on the site and look at it from the perspective that these air rights belong to the entire city, the voters in the entire city will be having to vote on it, and so there should be something in there for them too, to feel like, you know, if they're proving that that there's going to be benefit to the city as a whole. So that's really my comment.
Thank you. Okay. Let me see if there's anybody else from the public. I don't see any hands. Okay. Yes, who's that? Yep, Tanya?
Just a friendly reminder that if they're on the phone and they want to raise their hand, they have to hit *9 on their phone.
Thank you. And that's a very nice picture of you, Tanya.
Thank you.
Let's see. Okay, we'll give it a minute. So, folks, if you want to speak, *9 on your phone, and I'll see your hand, and then I can call on you. Otherwise, I can't see who wants to speak. There's only a total of 9 phone-in listeners, so not that many.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair?
Okay. Yeah, please.
Yeah, if I may. I just want to underline a couple things that Mr. Starkman said. First, it was his committee, the Budget Advisory Committee, that had a resolution on which we built about, you know, really assessing the value conferred to the developer. So I think he makes some smart points on that. But in addition, he teased up something that I think is worth some thought as we continue. And it's really to think about how these significant funds for the city would best be used from two lenses. One, what's the highest, best use of the dollars? But two, this ultimately does go to referendum. And so I think some real thoughts on where that money gets spent, how it benefits the community. I think it was one thing, and Mr. Martin, of course, knows the project quite well. One thing we did well with the convention center was dedicating those funds to high value causes such as resiliency and education. That really, really made a difference. So I think that's a branch of thinking that warrants some thought that Mr. Starkman teed up.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, we're going to address all the, there's a lot for us to tackle in the months ahead, but I just wanted to see what the appetite for this project was. And, you know, if there's not a groundswell of opposition, then let's move forward. We'll bring this at our next, not our next finance meeting, because that's next Friday, but as soon as we get those appraisals in and we have time to evaluate them, I think that's the next time we'll hear from David and his team. David, is that right as far as your timeline is concerned?
Yes, sir.
I think the next step, is wait.
And Ricky, I just want to thank you and the city staff and the city attorney's office because they're definitely stressed and stretched, and they've done an amazing job being able to focus on this as well as all their responsibilities. But I look forward to continuing, substantive discussions with the city staff and city attorney's office prior to the next finance committee meeting.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Eric, yeah.
We're going to proceed forward. We've also identified just as recently as yesterday that we will need another referral to both Land Use and Planning Board regarding the height of the building. The current zoning allows for 150 feet. If we're going to go to 225, we will need another referral, so we'll probably put something on the agenda for next Wednesday.
Yeah, put on the agenda for next Wednesday, yep. And that's certainly going to be something that, the community is going to have to weigh in on. 220 is definitely shorter than all the adjacent buildings, but I think that'll be a point of discussion for sure with the residents. Okay, anybody else? Okay, well, I'll adjourn the meeting then. It's 12:40. Everyone be safe. Enjoy the weekend. Cooped up in your houses. Anybody see anything good on Netflix you want to recommend? Nothing for the weekend? Oh, the Michael Jordan, Chicago Bulls documentary is going to be released on Sunday. It's supposed to be amazing, about the Chicago Bulls final season with Michael Jordan. That's going to be must-see TV for sports fans.
All right. Thanks, Chair, for conducting a great meeting. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, everyone.
Good seeing all of you. Good seeing you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.